From WNYC New York Public Radio, I'm Leonard Lopate. This is just one segment of the Leonard Lopate Show, but every interview is available on demand at WNYC.org. This on-demand service is made possible by WNYC and its listeners, so please help support this free service by becoming a member at WNYC.org.
WNYC On Demand is supported by Open, how American Express serves small business. Open offers a range of products and services designed exclusively for small business. Details at 888-779-OPEN or open.com.
You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
Earlier this year, there was a huge outcry when Dubai Ports World announced that a deal that would make it the operator of the Port of New York City had been struck. Was there reason for concern? How did this tiny emirate become one of the most important global business hubs? Well, joining me now is Julie Sell, finance correspondent for The Economist. Her article on Dubai's transformation into a major global financial center will appear in this coming week's issue, and I'm very pleased to welcome her to this month's Backstory. Hello.
Hello. Thank you.
Has Dubai always been a major port, more so than other cities on the coast of the Persian Gulf?
Well, it has a long tradition as a trading hub in the Middle East. It is right on the edge of the Persian Gulf, and so traders, either by land or by sea, have passed through there for centuries. But it really became an international port really just within the last couple of decades when the Jebel Ali cargo facility was opened.
What kind of government does Dubai have, and what role does it play in the United Arab Emirates?
Well, it's one of those places that many of us have a hard time understanding because it really just looks like a tiny dot on the map. But as you rightly say, it's part of the United Arab Emirates, which is the state that groups several of these semi-autonomous emirates. Dubai itself is the most populous of those, with a population of about 1 million. And it is ruled by a family, the Al Maktoum family. And the head of that family is rather well known here in Britain, for example, as being a keen horse racer and has a fleet of stables. The UAE, I should say, is inching toward democracy, at least on a limited basis, and in fact, in the next week, is going to have some selected elections for its legislature.
Is that why Dubai seems to be so much more liberal by Western standards than other Middle Eastern countries?
Its reputation is due to this Al Maktoum family, which has been very, really forward-looking, both in terms of opening society to the outside world and in some of these very grand projects that it's pursued.
Well, it seems to be more tolerant for religions other than Islam as well. There are Hindus there and Sikhs and lots of Europeans.
Well, indeed. In fact, 80% of the population of Dubai is made up of expatriates from all over the world. You know, to give you an idea how open the society is, not only are there, you know, luxury beach resorts and nightclubs serving alcohol, but it actually is now the home of the International Cricket Council.
100,000 British and other Western expatriates, that's an awful lot. How many of the people in the country are actually Emirati?
Well, only about 20% of that 1 million population. It's very small, and, you know, many of them are incredibly wealthy, so they don't have to work at all. The construction boom that has seized Dubai in recent years has actually all been built on the backs of migrant labor.
And are many of them from other Middle Eastern countries?
Most of the construction workers come from South Asia, India, Bangladesh, those sorts of places.
And why there? Why not from some of the neighboring countries where people are just as poor?
Well, I think it's a matter of just lots of supply. There are these agencies that go out scouring India, and, you know, despite what are incredibly difficult working conditions, in fact, in this hot desert environment, the people they're recruiting are so desperately poor, and hear the occasional story of someone who has made a fortune in relative terms, going off and working in the Gulf. I think there's just enough glimmer of hope there that they're willing to sign up and take a chance.
And as I understand it, Dubai has a long-standing trade relationship with India.
It does, indeed. And as they now are trying to raise their profile as sort of a regional financial center, India and indeed further east into Asia are very much in their sights. They would like to, you know, become a more important trading partner with that part of the world.
What about Dubai's relations with other countries in the Middle East? Are some upset by how tolerant the Dubai leaders seem to be?
Interestingly enough, no. One official in Dubai sort of described it to me as this tiny common law island amid an Islamic seat. And indeed, you know, the rulers of Dubai are Muslims themselves. And when you're meeting with government officials or business leaders, they're wearing the traditional Arab dress. So they're very respectful of that, follow the Muslim holy days, closing offices, that sort of thing. Nevertheless, they've managed to strike this wonderful balance. And in fact, people from all over the region flock to Dubai, both to do business as well as to relax. I mean, it is considered one of the primary resorts and holiday spots for people from all over the region. And I think governments around the region recognize that it's played this role, that it's been very careful not to antagonize other governments in the region politically, and seems to serve a very useful business and social role.
But I would assume that tolerance would also make them a target of extremists.
Well, there certainly is a lot of gossip about that within expatriate circles in Dubai. How exactly have they managed to avoid being attacked by Al-Qaeda, for instance? In fact, Dubai has a long reputation as a haven for money laundering, and indeed some of the funds used in the September 2001 terror attacks in America moved through Dubai. The government claims that it has clamped down on that, but the fact is that you could argue it may indeed still be a useful place for people seeking a bit of cover. In addition, the government, I have to say, has put in place a pretty sophisticated intelligence network and is quite strict when it comes to immigration control. So they like to reassure people that they've got things under control.
My guest is Julie Sell, finance correspondent for The Economist. We're talking about Dubai on today's Backstory. Has Dubai's economy been based on oil like the other countries in the Persian Gulf?
It does have oil reserves, but relatively fewer than many of its neighbors. And interestingly enough, that is what has prompted the government to begin this really incredible diversification program over the last decade or so. You know, step by step, what they've tried to do is build world-class facilities that are going to bring not only money but people to the emirate. So whether it's been this world-class cargo port, an airport that now is just a standard stopover for anyone flying, say, from Europe to Australia or the Far East, a world-class airline, resorts that, you know, are frequently advertised as holiday escapes for people here in Britain. On and on it goes. You may have seen the ads for these fantastic island resorts that are being developed now, the Palm and the World, all being reclaimed. And
artificial islands.
Artificial islands that, seen from above, are designed in the shape of a giant palm tree, and the other is actually in the shape of the world. And you've got, you know, professional footballers from all over Europe, for example, who are snatching up lots before these things are even completed. So Dubai has managed to combine this sort of fantastic vision with pretty flawless execution and to diversify its economy. And the next step, of course, is they're hoping now to become a financial hub for the region as well.
Well, they've had Zaha Hadid design the new opera house on one of the islands. But most of the pictures I've seen have suggested that this is a rather what word do I want to use? Vulgar place, kind of like like Las Vegas or Miami Beach in its heyday.
It certainly is not to everyone's taste. I have heard other terms used to describe it, tacky, et cetera.
Tacky is a good word. Yeah,
tacky. It's in the middle of a desert. It can get very dusty. It's certainly very flat. And so you have this series of very eye-catching buildings, some of them anyway, the world's only seven-star hotel, for example, that really kind of just rise out of the desert. But, you know, in between there is a lot of glitter, and I have heard it described as Las Vegas without the gambling.
The world's first rotating skyscraper. Is all of this building, all this construction and this incredible skyline, is it necessary because of the growing business needs?
Well, it's certainly not necessary, no. I mean, I think a lot of it has been done on a speculative basis, and you know, there are already questions about a possible real estate bubble in Dubai. Having said that, thus far, demand has been pretty strong. The approach of the government, which controls a lot of the big business interests, including some of the development interests there, is build it and they will come. And thus far, that strategy has worked for them.
Well, it is now the third largest re-exporting center in the world, and we're talking about this tiny little country. Is that all because of the Dubai International Financial Center?
It's really a combination of things. It's, you know, the port that we talked about earlier, the airport, those sorts of things. The financial center, which is known as the Dubai International Financial Center, is really an interesting experiment. Dubai, given its somewhat dodgy reputation in the past, has decided to create essentially a city within the city. That has its own laws, its own courts. Regulators have been imported from Britain and Australia. And this is meant to be a wholesale financial hub where global investment banks, private equity firms, hedge funds, investors from all over can come and work and do business in almost an insulated climate from the rest of the region and indeed the rest of Dubai. So that's very new. It's only opened 15 months ago, but already has attracted quite a lot of attention, and many, many firms have opened offices there.
Inspired by the success of Singapore and Hong Kong?
They very much have Singapore and Hong Kong in mind. And what's so unique about this is those other hubs were developed over a period of years. I mean, if you think about a New York or a London, I mean, centuries of development, building their centers really one trade at a time. And even the Singaporeans, you know, did it over the course of a decade. Dubai is trying to do it all in one shot, which is extremely ambitious.
And is Dubai as aggressive in attracting investors as China seems to be? Are they using similar tactics?
They have been quite aggressive. Because they are so small, they're looking for something slightly different. You know, China has all sorts of factories and businesses that need investment. Dubai, in fact, is trying to become sort of the gateway to the greater Middle East. They're saying, come work, live here, and you can service this entire region as it begins to open up. So, for example, there are many financiers who are working in Saudi Arabia but choose to base themselves in Dubai and fly in and out. They'll leave their families in Dubai as well.
So Dubai is attracting investment from the Middle East as well as from Western countries.
Exactly. And the vision of this financial center is to become a place where people who are providing and using capital, for example, companies in other Middle Eastern countries, can come and perhaps float their shares on a stock exchange, trade oil contracts, that sort of thing.
Well, the Dubai International Financial Exchange, which opened a year ago last September, allows remote trading, which makes it easy for traders in foreign countries to use the exchange. So you don't have to even go there.
Well, exactly. Yes. And in fact, that's a trend that's happening with stock exchanges all over the world, is that thanks to technology, electronic trading can happen almost anywhere in the world. And, you know, that honestly is one of the questions that remains with this financial exchange is, will it take off? Can it distinguish itself enough from other offerings out there?
Well, Beirut, of course, was the city that most people went to relax in the Middle East. But because of instability there, I'm assuming Dubai has been helped. But what about the instability in Iraq and Lebanon? Has that slowed business in Dubai?
Not at all. You're absolutely right that Beirut was the financial hub of the Middle East at one point. But really, you know, since their civil war began a number of years ago, the center of investment focus has moved very much to the Persian Gulf. Bahrain, which is another small city-state in the Gulf, has been very successful, and there are now over 300 banks there, many of them international banks. Other places like Kuwait and Qatar have made attempts, but thus far have been sort of niche markets, regional players. Dubai is really trying to grab that mantle and establish itself once and for all.
Well,
as the international.
Qatar has tried to establish itself as a major player in the world of journalism and has done rather well. So all of these emirates are finding their own little niches?
Well, they are, exactly. I mean, the other thing that Qatar is known for is for project finance, which is probably not as sexy as you know, owning Al Jazeera. But when you consider all the big petrochemical plants and things that are being built in the region, that's the other thing they're known for is getting those deals done.
Are internationally held companies moving to Dubai as a tax haven in the same way that they move to other places where which invited businesses with very low taxes or no taxes?
They are offering some pretty attractive incentives to come to this new financial center. Zero tax on profits, 100% foreign ownership is allowed, no restrictions on foreign exchange, that sort of thing. So that at the moment is by far the most attractive package of incentives that's often offered in the region. As someone said to me, they've taken the best from Bermuda and Switzerland and are trying to combine those concepts.
When the Dubai Ports World was named the operator of the Port of New York, there was serious concern amongst American politicians. And as you mentioned earlier, there may have been a good reason because Dubai was a conduit for monies involved in the 9/11 attacks. Should people have been as concerned as they were, do you think?
Well, I think, you know, Dubai Ports became a real political hot potato. You know, I think, unfortunately, there's still a lot of misunderstanding or lack of understanding in the West about the differences between Middle Eastern states. And the fact is that Dubai is one of the most stable, open, tolerant places anywhere in the region. With a history of long investing in the West. So I think what you were seeing there was it was a political reaction that didn't necessarily bear a lot of connection with the reality of who was doing the bidding. Interestingly enough, investors rushed into the bond. It was actually structured as an Islamic bond called a sukuk that financed that deal, and it was multiple times oversubscribed. So in the financial world, that deal was notable for quite a different reason, and that was its massive popularity.
Dubai Ports World operates ports around the world, but it was announced in Monday's New York Times that it sold the rest of its ports business in the United States to the insurance company AIG.
Mm-hmm. Yes. I think that probably had something to do with the political reaction early on. The company that they bought, a British-based company, has port interests around the world, and I think they probably found that it was in their political and economic interest to focus elsewhere.
So
I don't
wasn't
have
a,
the inside story on that.
You don't think it was a major setback for Dubai's investment plans?
I think that they were surprised and disappointed with the reaction from the United States. I think there was a recognition that they needed to do a better job of explaining how Dubai differed, perhaps, from the rest of the region.
And since it does differ and is such a success, why do you think it isn't being imitated more by other? I'm assuming a country like Saudi Arabia would find it impossible to do something like this. But there must be other places in the Middle East that would look at Dubai and say, why can't we do something like that?
Well, you know, I think it's a good point, and you're beginning to see that. Obviously, some of these small city-states have a little bit more room to maneuver than a big country like Saudi Arabia. And I mentioned a few of them earlier. Bahrain, Qatar, Kuwait are all having taken a stab at this earlier, are all beginning to say, well, gee, maybe we need to loosen up even more, seeing the success of Dubai. Perhaps the most interesting example, though, is Abu Dhabi, which is another one of these emirates. In fact, it's a neighbor abutting Dubai. And they, after announcing lots of grand plans in the past and having rather mixed success, are now trying to portray themselves as the cultural capital of the region. In fact, they earlier this year signed an agreement with the Guggenheim Museum to build the world's largest Guggenheim. It will be designed by Frank Gehry.
Everything has to be the largest?
They are now, they seem to like that sort of thing. They're now in talks with the Louvre. So,
wow.
Yeah, stay tuned. Lots happening in the Gulf at the moment.
Well, it looks like we're going to have to go to the Gulf to relax and to see great art. Julie Sell is finance correspondent for The Economist. I want to thank you so much for talking to us about Dubai on today's backstory. Now I understand what's been happening all these years.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the Leonard Lopate Show from WNYC, New York Public Radio. You can hear everything we do and check out our other programs on demand at WNYC.org or on iTunes. This on-demand service is made possible by WNYC and its listeners, so please help support this free service by becoming a member at WNYC.org. And thanks.